amazing Kate Casey.
Welcome back to another episode of Reality Life with Kate Casey. Again, I hope that you guys have been having a great week. The other night, I was up late watching American Idol and crying my face off. This season is really good. Now, forget about the fact that Evelyn from 90 Day Fiancé is a contestant on the show. Nothing's changed. I still hate her. But there are a couple other contestants that are so good. And you know, sometimes the show's a little hard for me to watch if the people have a terrible singing voice. But I'm telling you, this season, they're nailing it. First of all, there's Alejandro, who's a musical genius. Self-taught 4 years ago, can play the guitar like he's been playing for 27 years. And a beautiful, beautiful voice. And he's this soft-spoken, very sweet, unassuming person who was a dishwasher up until he tried out for the show. You have Demetrius, who's basically a male Beyonce. He sang with Lucas Graham, and I was basically on the floor crying. And then there is the delight of Jeremiah Lloyd Harmon, who is a musical teacher, 26 years old, from Maryland. He sang Time After Time by Cyndi Lauper, which basically is one of the greatest songs ever. Let me just give you a little piece of it. Okay. I mean, I lost my mind. My husband was out of town, so he wasn't there to judge me. The kids were all asleep. And then I looked through YouTube videos of both of them for a good extra half hour. I could barely keep my eyeballs open when the baby woke up in the middle of the night. I don't even know what I fed her. It may have been Coke Zero. I don't know. But I'm telling you, you've got to check out American Idol. Unbelievable. This week's episode, I love. First of all, Phil Kogan has been the host of Amazing Race since 2001. I can't even get over how well produced the show is. They've received so many awards and they deserve every single one of them. What they have to do to make this show happen is mind-boggling. And it really is above all of the other competition shows. Maybe not Survivor, but it is an unbelievable show, and what a nice guy. Can you imagine the life experiences that he's had traveling all over the world? And I'd like to also add, I would be terrible on that show. I'm the pickiest eater. Like, what am I supposed to do in Asia when I eat gluten-free? I mean, like, come on. Also, I could never have my husband run with me. I've said this before. I know that we would be in fights the whole time because we argue when we drive to Los Angeles. I mean, it would just be a nightmare. And I'm also terrible with directions. So if you're an Amazing Race lover, you're going to love this interview with him. Kimberly and Katie from Date with Dateline are so funny. And I made them watch Selling Sunset on Netflix. If you love real estate shows, this is right up your alley. And there's so much to unpack with the show. So get on Netflix right now and start watching episodes. And I promise you, you will find yourself hours later still watching them. And then Darren Karp is like Andy Cohen's right-hand lady. She does everything. She used to be his assistant and she's super dialed into the network there and does a bunch of very cool things. She's also the host of Martinis and Murders on Oxygen. So she loves true crime just like you guys do. I asked her to watch The Disappearance of Madeline McCann, which is also on Netflix. It's difficult to watch if you're a parent, but like I always say, this stuff is important for us to watch so we can all just remind each other the importance of, you know, protecting all kids. Anyway, this is a great episode. I'm so excited for you to listen, and I'm hoping again that you've had time to watch some great TV shows this week. By the way, I did end up watching the whole Boy Band Con on YouTube Premium. I want you guys to also listen or to watch it because there's a lot to unpack of that too. Oh, and one more thing. I am just about finished with Ladies Who Punch, which is that book about The View. And we're going to do a Facebook Live in the Reality Life with Kate Casey group on Sunday and talk about that book because there's so much to discuss. So here we go. You guys know I'm crazy about Audible because it offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. Audible really is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment. With female writers and heroines, celebrity narration, multicast productions with immersive sound design, and traditional audiobooks, Audible has you covered for any type of excitement that you're looking for. In fact, right now I'm listening to The Second Husband by Kate White. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. That's audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. The Amazing Race is back with yet another exciting season of teams of two dashing between international checkpoints to win the much sought after $1 million prize. It's premiering April 17th, so mark your calendars. Phil Kogan has been to over 100 countries around the world as host, producer, author, motivational speaker, and cyclist. He's been hosting the show since 2001. Phil, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
So tell me a little bit about how you got this job, because everyone believes it to be the best job in the entire world.
Well, I'm not going to disagree with that. I feel like I won the lottery when I got this job. I had hosted a show for CBS back in 1999. It was a special. And I guess I was on the radar over at CBS. And then I was being considered for Survivor with Jeff Probst. And so I was back on the radar there. And then I got shortlisted again for Amazing Race. And there were a few different shows going on at that time. There was a show called Guinness Book of World Records that the network was doing. The networks were really starting to get into the idea of doing network reality shows. And of all of them and all of the people that I was talking to, The Amazing Race was the one that really struck a chord with me. And thankfully, they took a chance on me. I had just been hosting a show for the Discovery Channel, which was called Adventure Crazy, where I got my life list, my list of things to do before I died. And I had been traveling around the world, 26 different countries and 26 different episodes, doing all kinds of crazy things, from breaking world records and being adventurous, I guess, out in the world. And that really helped. And then I was lucky enough to be part of the race team, which we said go in Central Park in early 2001.
Now this season, the teams are going to include members of castaways from Survivor, house guests from Big Brother, people from Amazing Race previous episodes or seasons. How hard is it for you, because I know that you are a producer now of the show as well, how hard is it for you to find the right people to be in each season?
Well, look, I mean, just to be clear about my involvement in the casting, I go to the casting sessions and I certainly weigh in with my opinion. But, you know, casting is a very specific job, and we have really good people who do it and have done it over the years. It's crucial to any reality show because the people that you put in front of the camera, the words that come out of their mouths, the reactions that they have to the impetus, to what the situation that they're in, that is, they're like the script writers of reality. We transcribe those words, and those words really dictate the story. You know, that's why it is absolutely crucial that we get that right. Because if you put a dull cast into a really amazing adventure around the world, it's still going to be dull. But you could put really vibrant, captivating characters into a dull situation and they could still make it vibrant. So I would say the the key, absolute key element of any reality show working is the cast. And so we have a team of experts. Then we all go in and we look at the short list of people. And ultimately, it's the network that signs off on who they think are going to make a good TV. And I will tell you, sometimes people exceed our expectations and they offer way more than we ever expected. And there are times when a team maybe doesn't meet our expectations for one reason or another, because they just get so overwhelmed by the jet lag, or they just find it so hard to cope. So, but overall, we have a very high strike rate with the cast that goes out. And overall, it's a little bit like cooking. You got to have the right ingredients. You can't just make a dish, just, you know, beautiful, fresh vegetables. You also need spices and you need sauces. And so a good cast is not about one team. It's about the collective. And that is what we're serving up, if you like, to the audience, a great mixture of really interesting, telegenic, captivating characters.
Does it help you when the contestants have had some television experience?
Not really. No, I mean, I've always said this. I mean, it's, and again, it's only my opinion. I prefer the people who are more fish out of water characters. But I also know that our fans and race fans and Survivor fans and Big Brother fans have also for a long time really been wanting to see this reality mashup. And, I have to, you know, say initially I was like, okay, I'm not really sure how this is going to go, but it exceeded my expectations, because these Survivor Big Brother teams really are like fish out of water characters, because they have no idea. I mean, they have been competing in a house where their world are the four walls of the Big Brother house, or they've been on an island where they're essentially in their own world. I mean, that's like a large set on Survivor. Suddenly, when you're thrust into the real world and it's a race course that extends 35,000 miles around the world, and you're going to dozens of countries, and you're exposed to the elements of the real world, the weather, the train schedules, that you cannot create a protective layer around the show. The show is in the world, and the world dictates what we do. So these teams are fish out of water. Even though they've been on reality before, they have no idea what's coming. And for those amazing racers who have come back, because the show is always different, because they're always, you think about a lot of shows that have a challenge. The cast will get briefed on the challenge. Okay, everybody, here's how it works. You're going to run up here. You're going to go down there. You're going to leap across here. There's a briefing. There's no briefing on Amazing Race. You rip the envelope and it says fish like the local fishermen do. And all of a sudden you're, you know, up to your neck in water in the surf, and you're trying to climb up a stick with little pegs on it, and you're trying to figure out how to fish like the local fishermen do. So it's baptism by fire, if you like, more on our show than a lot of the other, say, challenge type shows.
I don't think that people understand, you are doing 12 episodes in 21 days and visiting anywhere from 3 to 6 continents. How in the world are you able to pull this off? Like, what are some of the logistics issues? Like, for example, a lot of people want to know, like, how do you get traveling visas for everyone without them knowing where they're going to go?
Well, you're talking about now why the show works. The show works because we have I'm a part of a huge team of super experienced people who are really good at what they do. Amazing art directors who can pull together local resources to be able to dress a set, or to suddenly find an extra donkey in the middle of the night because we need a spare donkey because one of the other donkeys walked off into the wilderness, or or maybe they can't find the donkeys. Now we have to go with mules. And so we're all operating in a state of heightened anxiety for 21 days. Mm-hmm. And I explained to people, you know, there are days where we will not get to a hotel room. We will shoot all day. We will fly overnight. We'll get up, shoot all day, fly all night, get up, shoot all day. we're rolling from one place to another, and there's no time to breathe. It's no time to get it right. So the planning that goes in to the logistics is so complicated. The charts, if one thing gets out of place, one thing goes wrong, we lose a certain element, and it has a domino effect all the way down the line to the finishing show. I've had fans say to me, "Oh, you must just choose when you want a non-elimination or an elimination." And I have to explain to them, can you imagine if you suddenly just said, "Oh, you know what? I love this team. Let's make it a non-elimination." Where are you going to find the extra hotel room, the extra flight, the extra logistics, the extra car for the challenge, the extra donkey that you need for the challenge? You can't just make this stuff up as you're going along. It comes with months and months of planning. So yeah, the logistics are off the hook. You think about shooting a studio show in the Valley. It's 69 degrees. You've got four walls. Cameras are hot at 9. You roll cameras. Lunch is at 12:30. Beautiful catering service. Nobody's sweating inside that studio. It's beautiful. It's beautifully lit. A camera breaks down. You go, "Oh, I'm going to call the camera rental place. It'll be here in a half an hour." Well, when you're in Botswana and you're in the middle of a salt pan, and a camera goes down because of the heat or dust gets in the camera, and maybe it's not one camera, it's two cameras, and you can't grab a cell phone and call anybody because there's no cell phone service, and you can't call over to the Valley to get a replacement camera. You have to make do with what you have. And so there's a whole other layer to making this show work, and a lot of unsung heroes on Amazing Race who keep this thing on the air and who keep this thing rolling and who have maintained a standard of excellence for 18, 19 years. I mean, I can't tell you, but, I feel a tremendous responsibility to be the best that I can be because I am surrounded by an unbelievable team of people who I marvel at what they do. So, my grandfather always said, you never want to be the weakest link in a chain. So I'm always fighting to be the best that I can be at my job. And there's no makeup, there's no wardrobe, there's no, I'm writing, making script changes on the road as we go, because like I said, things are chopping and changing. There's a lot to this show that is hard to describe. It's complicated. It's very complicated.
How many people are just traveling with you in like the scenes where the teams are running to the end of the finish line? What are we not seeing? Just a team of like 25 people behind you?
Well, it can be upwards of 50 people moving at a time.
Oh, wow.
And then don't forget every team has got a cameraman and a sound person. And there are country producers who look after different countries. They go ahead to prep up for us to arrive. We roll in like a steam train. We get out of the airport, and sometimes I'm on the same flight as the team, and I have to go to every place they need to go. So if their first destination is a detour, I might divert, and I might take a detour myself and go to the roadblock and shoot that explanation. And then as they leave the detour to travel to the roadblock, I'll flip across to the detour and I'll shoot that. And then I have to make the calculation constantly about whether I can be slightly ahead of them to be the first one at the mat to welcome the first team in.
Oh,
sometimes I can't get everything shot before they get to the mat. So then I go to the mat, and then on the way to the airport out of there, I'll go back and get them to hold the six donkeys. I keep talking about donkeys, but I get them to hold the set in place and say, "I'll be there. I'm going to whip in quickly before I go to the airport. And I'll whip in, and then I'll shoot the explanation, and then I'll go to the airport." But if you think about all the leapfrogging that's going on, so you might have a team of cameras at the detour, and they're covering the event while the teams is there. Well, when the last team leaves, that group of people are now resources that can be used on another challenge. So they'll wait for the first team. They'll wait for the last team. Then as soon as they're clear, they'll leapfrog to another challenge. So it might be over at the speed bump, or it might be over at a yield or something. And so they divert over there. Now they're dealing with real life challenges, traffic. Suddenly there's a donkey going in a, sorry, not a donkey, an elephant. Let me use a different animal. maybe there's an elephant involved in an Indian festival in the street, and suddenly they get caught in traffic. And then the producers are calling, hey, where are you guys at? You know, we need you over here. The teams are about to arrive in 10 minutes. And they go, well, we're stuck in a festival here. There's an elephant right in front of us. We can't get there. Well, hurry up, you guys. You know, we need you there. We need the coverage. So, and then, you know, then all of a sudden the skies open up and there's a monsoon. And then teams are on a train that was meant to get in at such and such a time, but the train is broken down. You know, these are props and things that are part of our show that we don't have any control over. You know, I can't tell you the number of times we sat on a plane and it's delayed and we watched the teams take off ahead of us on another plane outside the window.
Oh my gosh. And then
it's complicated.
So when you're waiting for pairs at the finish line, I'm assuming that you're not just sitting there, you're writing scripts, you're working out logistical issues with the crew.
Yeah, so I shoot the introduction to the pit stop, so we're working that out. We work out the camera positions for when the teams are going to run in, where are the crew going to be to let them run in into the mat, the choreography of when they run into the mat, looking at the lighting, of, you know, which changes throughout the day, sometimes from day to night, so we might have to bring in lights. So that's a constantly changing element. But then you have to the other thing that people forget is that I don't know what the audience knows when the team arrives at the mat. So if you're watching the show 3 months later, you've seen everything I haven't.
Right.
And now they come to the mat, and now I'm meant to be up to date with what you've seen and what I'm meant to know the story, right? So the only way I can stay on top of the story is I have to follow along with story notes on my phone, take notes, look at things I need to interview them about at the mat. Understanding I haven't seen it, it's all hearsay. It's just notes from, the team that's at the detour. They say, hey, heads up, by the way, Chris has sprained his ankle, or, heads up, we had a team that just had a big argument at over who was going to do the roadblock. So I have to be armed with all of that information. You know, and every now and again, a fan will say something like, how come you didn't ask them about this? Or how come you didn't? A lot of times it's just because I didn't know in that moment. I sure know after the fact. And then what happens if those notes get, that information doesn't get to me because we're in a place where there is no cell phone service or that information can't get to me? You know, it's changed a lot over the years in terms of how the information is disseminated. But technology has definitely helped our show because we have new ways of communicating that we just didn't have back in the day. And there's more cell phone coverage in more remote places in the world than there was when we first started too.
What is the response that from foreigners to this American show? What has your experience been? Are people welcoming, or realistically, are there people that you've come across that have a bad taste for Americans?
I would be lying if I said, you know, that there weren't people that had, they didn't necessarily have a warm and fuzzy feeling towards Americans. And I'll tell you why. And conversely, there are as many people who just love welcoming us. I think one of the greatest things about Amazing Race is that we are able to dispel a lot of myths about the rest of the world, because we are fed a lot of information in network primetime television and in media in general about what's wrong with the world, who hates Americans, and there are these bad people that are dressed up in clothes that we don't wear ourselves, or they live in a culture that is different from ours. You don't see good news about other countries or other people typically. It's generally when something goes wrong, it makes the news, and then we become fearful, and then we think we can't travel, and those people we talk about, you hear people talking about, oh, those people, they hate us, et cetera, et cetera. There is so much love out there for people in general, regardless of what nationality they are, that we are able to dispel some of those myths. And conversely, when we have good ambassadors traveling, we don't always, I mean, there's some ugly Americans that we've had for sure traveling on the show at times, but on the whole, when they get to see us in a positive light, it's the same thing. It opens their eyes up to the fact that there is so much, there are so many wonderful people in America. People think of America as a safe country, and it is, but they are very surprised to find out that it's not the safest country in the world and doesn't even rate in the top 10. They can't quite believe it. Like, what do you mean? How can, you know, we keep seeing this news about how dangerous it is out in the world and how these people hate us. How can America not be the safest place in the world? And so there are lots of safe places to travel to. There are lots of good people in the world. And I think that's, to me, our show is more relevant now as a means of creating understanding in the world than it has ever been. Because there is a lot of divisiveness now in the media about us and them. You know, I come from Christchurch. We just had this terrible killing, this terrorist act in Christchurch.
Yeah.
I'm very concerned about some of the misunderstandings that exist in the world and just some of the sort of one-eyed opinions that people have about how the world is, that the more we can kind of show. I had people stop me and say, did those Muslim people really invite them into their home and offer them money, or were they really like that? Because something like the word Muslim is so associated with terrorism and that people just assume, well, they must all be bad people. How could they not all be bad people? Because every time I see them, they're on the news doing something bad. And conversely, sometimes when people see Americans on TV, they're also doing something bad. And so they assume that Americans are all the same. And nothing could be further from the truth. I mean, there's so many wonderful people everywhere you go on the earth.
How many times do you cry? Because I feel like I am going to cry just having you explain that to me. I mean, Pete, you probably see such humanity in this job.
I can't tell you. Yes, you're absolutely right. And years ago, I rode my bicycle across America. And years before that, I used to do a live show across America in every single state. And I went to everywhere in America. I mean, everywhere, all 50 states, little places like Zanesville, Ohio. And I saw America up close, heartland America. And Americans are unbelievably generous people. And I find anywhere you go in the world, there's a direct correlation between those who have the least and those who give the most.
Tips for joining the show. If somebody's sitting at home right now and they're like, that sounds like something I'd love to do, what do you think they need to know before they fill out the application?
Well, first and foremost, don't try to be anybody else. Don't be, you know, try to model yourself after another player that you might like. Be yourself. It's hard to describe what you're looking for until you see it.
Right.
You know, when the Goths walked in, if you remember Kenton Vixen, mm-hmm. in season 15, when they walked in, we hadn't written a mandate like, oh, we'd love to have a couple who are Goths and who wear light makeup and who are kind of a contrast to each other. They just walked in and we went, well, this is interesting. Like, where did you guys come from? And they were unique and they were different. And or the Cowboys, one of my favorite teams ever. You know, they walk in with their cowboy hats on and their beautiful manners. and they endeared themselves to so many fans. So be yourself. Remember that you're selling yourself. So you've got to put some energy into selling yourself. It'd be a little bit like if you met somebody of, you know, a potential partner at a bar and you were trying to flirt with them a wee bit, you would want to put on a good impression. So you'd be wanting to, like, let them know why you might be a good potential partner or a good potential date. So they're, you know, remember that. So you have to flirt with the camera.
Do you remember Stassi from Vanderpump Rules and her family?
I absolutely do. Yes, I do.
What is your, like, memory of them?
Well, certainly you could tell that they knew how to sell themselves, that's for sure. But I haven't seen the show for a long, long time. Why, have you got some information for me?
No, but everyone wanted to know because they've always been fascinated that she was on Amazing Race before Vanderpump Rules and actually suspect that perhaps she's so successful as a cast member on that show and navigating reality television because of the experience that her family had on Amazing Race.
Well, that's it's an interesting point. I mean, I personally like when people are more like they are literally there just for the experience of wanting to be on the show, for the experience of what Amazing Race has to offer, rather than seeing it as a stepping stone to something else. Because I think there's a different mindset when people come in that way.
Yeah,
that's just my personal opinion, and the landscape has changed so much since we started, when you think about the idea that people can leverage an opportunity like being on a reality show into something else.
Yes.
That just didn't exist a while ago. So, you know, there's that fine balance of people being too media savvy, that they're too aware of themselves, that they don't let their guard down, and suddenly you don't see the real them. You see the them that they want people to see, as opposed to just that raw reaction of just being so innocent. And there's an innocence that's being lost in reality television now because of the fact that people are watching themselves back.
Yes. Well, you must be so proud of your team. This is an unbelievable show. It deserves every award that's received. I'm so excited. The show premieres April 17th. Tell everybody where they can find you. And I know you work on a couple other things, so please tell us what you're working on.
Sure. What I would love to tell people is that I'm going to be interviewing the original winners of The Amazing Race, Robin Brennan, season one winners, on my podcast, which will be launched. The interview with them will be launched on April 17th. The podcast is called Bucket with an IT, so Bucket with Phil Kogan. It's available wherever podcasts are available, and also the video version is at philkogan.com. And at some point I'll be interviewing Leo and Jamal as well on the show. And Bucket is really about just inspiring people to get out there and to live their full lives. So we have everybody from Mark McGrath to Bonnie Hunt to astronauts to even my dad, who was a greeter on season 13 of Amazing Races, on it. So.
Oh, awesome.
With four daughters and two on a dance team, I can tell you we go through a lot of mascara in my house, but I'm crazy about L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara, which catches every lash from corner to corner for maximum volume. If you're looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank, this is yours. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. I've been using it for about 2 weeks now, and I feel like my eye has completely opened up, and the girls are crazy about it too. They've got a tapered brush to catch every lash, one of the best mascara wands that I've ever used. And like I said, this luxe appearance of this gold package, you gotta get it. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara, you're gonna love it. This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. If you're looking for new style inspiration, Saks.com is the place to go. Saks.com is making it easy for me to shop for the spring with their selection of chic clothes and accessories. Right now, I'm looking at Saks.com so I can find my new going out vibe. I'm looking for a breezy Zimmerman dress for an evening cocktail party. And for my upcoming conference in Los Angeles, I'm looking at bright Chloe blazers because I'm pushing myself to wear more orange and pink. Saks.com will inspire you to shop for everything on your agenda. So find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
A Date with Dateline. They recap each new Dateline episode with lovingly snark twist, giving their entirely uninformed opinions on the clever and not so clever murder plots, the affairs, the antifreeze, the poetic prose of the prolific host, and everything else you need to win their Dateline bingo cards. Katie and Kimberly, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Thank you for having us. We're so excited.
Thanks so much.
All right. I have asked you to watch a show called Selling Sunset. I've been talking about this show. Basically, for those that have not watched it, it is an 8-episode series that follows a group of real estate agents on the Sunset Strip. Now, the show centers on the real estate brokers at the Oppenheim Group, which focuses on multi-million dollar homes for wealthy clients, so they say. Twins Jason and Brett Oppenheim, who I've mentioned before, look like two vertically challenged bald men with bulbous arms and ill-fitting t-shirts, run the company, along with their all-female group of agents who look like latter-day Playboy playmates. The series focuses on what happens when a new agent, Chriselle Hartley, Chriselle, her name is a combination of Chris and Shell, referring to the man Chris who helped deliver her at a gas station, and Shell, the gas station in Kentucky where she lived. She's married.
That's not a joke.
That's true. She's married to This Is Us star Justin Hartley, who plays Kevin on that show. Again, This Is Us. My lady friends, what do we think of this show?
Well, I just want to point out that we watch murder shows for a living, and this was just as disturbing.
This is a very accurate portrayal of every woman in Los Angeles. Let's just throw that out there. This is
that we try to avoid.
No, just pretty much this is what everyone is. If you move to Los Angeles, you basically get suited up with Louboutins, and you get a job like this, and then you make your living.
I don't live in a studio apartment with no dishwasher.
No, absolutely not.
No washing machine. No, of course not.
Yeah. No, my air conditioner isn't broken. No, we live like this.
Why is Chriselle on this show?
Because she's married to the guy on This Is Us, for sure. And you have to have a sweet character, I'm guessing. And I think that she is supposed to be the underdog. That's right? She's supposed to be the underdog.
Yeah, and they throw her into the lion's den. That's what the plot is supposed to be.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, there is a plot, even though it's a reality show. Let's get real.
It's softly scripted. That's what we're calling it.
Now, it seems to me that Maya and Chriselle are the ones that are actually selling real estate. And what they're selling is probably more like duplexes and one-story homes and condos in the valley. It doesn't seem like there are many sales going on within Los Angeles proper. Do you get the sense that any of these women are actually quite successful in the real estate industry?
I think they're very good at acting like they're successful.
Mm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yes. Especially Christine, the resident B-word. But looking back, she'll diss clients the second they walk out of the room to the camera. So I think she's much more interested in being a reality star and quitting this job.
Do you believe that Mary, who's the elder real estate agent, she claims she's 39. I'm going to go with a hard 49 because nobody in television admits to their real age. So if they're telling me that she's 39, I'm going to add 10 years.
I could not agree more. I actually showed her to my husband. And I said, how old is this woman? I need you to tell me how old she is. Just look at her and give me a blank age. And he's like, 44. And I was like, right. So, but would you believe that she's dating a 25-year-old French pastry/model?
Pastry chef/model?
Is that what he was?
Well, yeah, he's a hyphenate. Yeah.
They claim. I don't believe that he's 25 either. I think he was like an even 33. There's no way he was 25, and I don't believe that he's a pastry chef. I think that he probably sells protein supplements at Equinox. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. Also, he is only 4 years older than her son, so I think that she has lip fillers older than both of them.
Do you think that Mary and our young French pastry chef friend...
Romaine, like the lettuce.
Romaine, whose English is questionable. Are they together? Are they really? Is that... Okay, great.
No,
we're all on the same page.
This is my guess. My guess is that he's her personal trainer. She said, I've got this opportunity to be on TV. I need to make it seem like I'm younger. I feel a lot of pressure. I finally get my chance to be on TV, but I'm considered an old widow now. So what do I do? And he's like, I want to stay in the United States a little bit longer. If you could work out some sort of work, like visa program for me, let's pretend that we're together. And then maybe I can get some sort of secondary TV opportunity through this, and it'll make you look younger. Because I don't even believe yes. they've ever kissed.
Oh, no. It was the most awkward engagement I've ever... The engagement was rough to watch. Yeah.
But really, there's a bunch of people that work for that show that aren't on the show, that work for that company. So the only way she gets on the show is if she has this drama with the young boyfriend.
So then there's Maya. Maya is from Israel. She has an incredibly annoying accent. Did it bother you the way it bothered me? And when she was in that black mesh top and she said, asked everybody in the office to quiet down and said, it's time to be silent of the lamb.
Yeah.
Oh.
Did you want to punch her through the TV the way I did?
She was the only one I could half tolerate.
Now, do you believe that property was $40 million and was it sold by anybody in that real estate office?
No. I don't believe so.
It didn't sell, right? I mean, that's the lead in for part two. I'm assuming we're going to have part two and three of this because it was a ginormous hit, right? It was,
season two should be a full on Hunger Games to see who sells that house. And they are competing for stilettos and diamond rings and clawing at each other's
real
faces.
Real diamond rings.
Yes.
Yeah, real not diamonds. The fake one that Mary got.
And also, Christine kind of blew off the way that you get your real estate license. It was sort of like you go to the doctor, you get some Adderall, you study for like 3 months, and then you take the test and it's super easy.
Yeah, that was a phenomenal statement. That was episode one, I think. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's no, I think Christine has planned all of her sound bites ahead of time.
I agree.
And then when there's a situation that kind of has to do with that, she goes to her little note section on her phone and picks the sound bite that she's written, and then she does it for the camera.
I couldn't agree more. Now, here's my question. Now that you have watched approximately 749 episodes of Dateline,
yeah.
Which one of these real estate agents is most capable of committing a murder?
Oh, gosh. I like Christine is the obvious one.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I think she's maybe a softie underneath and is doing this to be the villain. Davina, I think, is a sociopath.
Yeah. Davina, we don't see a lot of, and I think there's a reason for that. I think they're like, she's a bit.
She's not introduced till like episode three. Because she became a bitch. So she was clearly like, I'm not getting any attention. What can I do? I'm going to be the bitch. I'm going to out-bitch Christine. And then she got on the show.
Interesting.
It worked for her, I guess.
Can we go with David and Brett? Can we go with the actual Oppenheimer twins? Okay. Because I feel like that's if it hasn't happened already, it's coming.
There's only been a few datelines about murderous twins, but they're great datelines.
Uh-huh. So did anyone notice the waiters in this? That the waiters repeat? They repeat waiters,
yes.
Which makes me think they're getting IMDb credits.
Oh, yes. Well done.
The
well
same
done.
Redheadish guy.
The ginger. Yep.
The ginger at two different restaurants.
Correct. And they keep introducing themselves. It keeps being like, hi, I'm Mike. Can I take your order? Hi, I'm Brett. Can
no!
I take your order? So what waiter introduces themselves, number one? And then he had the shakiest hands. He's giving the whole milk cappuccino, which kept catching my ear because they kept saying it. And it's the shakiest cup and saucer. And
this I'm like, first big gig. Him. He's nervous.
Recast. But they're planted. They are planted wait staff. That was crazy to me.
Well done. Yeah. I need to go back and watch that. Where can people find your podcast? Because here's the thing. People who watch reality television shows also watch everything to do with true crime. It is a fact. True crime, documentary, reality show, they all go together. So where can they have their hair blown back with amazing, interesting murder cases and the two of you ripping them apart?
You can find us on iTunes and all podcast apps, A Date with Dateline. We often discuss 90 Day Fiancé and when Danielle is going to kill Mohammed and when that'll be on a Dateline. We're on Twitter and Instagram, Dateline, and on Facebook. We're going to be at CrimeCon in June in New Orleans, and we have a Patreon, Dateline, and we're pretty snarky. Katie cuts out the really mean stuff, but I'm pretty mean.
Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos, all commission-free. While other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, Robinhood doesn't charge any commission fees, so you can trade stocks and keep all of your profits. Plus, there's no account minimum deposit needed to get started, so you can start investing at any level. The simple, intuitive design of Robinhood makes investing easy for newcomers and experts alike. View easy-to-understand charts and market data and place a trade in just 4 taps on your smartphone. You can also view stock collections such as 100 Most Popular. With Robinhood, you can learn how to invest in the market as you build your portfolio. Discover new stocks, track your favorite companies, and get custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. Robinhood is giving listeners of Reality Life with Kate Casey a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help build your portfolio. Sign up at reality.robinhood.com. It's almost summertime. Do you feel like you're prepared? And do you have a great sandal? I love Tikis. They're leather sandals handcrafted in Brazil. You know, they're pretty much worn by all my best friends, Angelina Jolie, Beyonce, Cindy Crawford, and they have free monogramming available. So if you're looking for something for a bridal shower or a baby shower gift, and listeners of my show are going to get 15% off with the code REALITY. You need to go on their website and check out their nudes collection, which is designed to match every skin tone. And you know, if you wear a skin-colored shoe, it makes your legs look longer. Anna Wintour bought Tikis for all the women at her daughter Bea Schaefer's wedding. And I think you're about to get a brand new pair too. So if you go to Tikis, TKEES.com/reality and enter code REALITY at checkout, you're going to get 15% off your purchase. That's Tikis, TKEES.com/reality for 15% off. Darren Karp is well known as Andy Cohen's right-hand lady, making all things happen over at Bravo headquarters. She's also a huge true crime buff, has a podcast about it, and is also a huge TV lover. Darren, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Kate. I'm really excited to talk to you today.
Actually, the first question I have is, tell everybody all the things that you do, because you are more than just an assistant.
Thank you. I do a lot. So yeah, I started out as Andy's assistant. I mean, we sort of had this joke that I'm like his chief of staff, but I'm really his right hand or his left hand, depending on what he's doing. I just had an 8-year anniversary with him. So I've been with him for almost a decade. So we've really grown together and he's been such a mentor. So I definitely work with him. That is part of my day job. The other part of my day job is I host a podcast on Oxygen called Martinis and Murder. Please check it out. It's basically once a week, we do a murder case or a disappearance case, and then we drink themed martinis to go along with that murder that week, however it relates to the case. So I basically get paid to get drunk at work on Wednesdays at 4. So I really can't complain about my job. And then I also have my own BravoTV.com web series called Bravo Pregame, where I essentially interview all the Bravo celebrities that come on Watch What Happens Live before they go on the show. It's in their dressing room getting ready. And then I ask them questions based on preview clips of what we're going to see that week. So those come out. I have about 6 episodes coming out, and they come out every Monday. You can find those at BravoTV.com/Bravo Pregame.
So I listened to your episode that you did about a year and a half ago on the Madeleine McCann case. Since then, this since then, this Netflix special has come out. It's probably only been up maybe 2 weeks, but it's called The Disappearance of Madeleine McCann, again on Netflix. And it's a
eight-part series.
It's a detailed look at the disappearance of 3-year-old Madeleine McCann, who vanished while on holiday with her family. So before we get into the nitty-gritty, how much do you think that this series changed your perspective from that episode that you did about a year and a half ago?
Well, okay. So here's the thing. Like, we always say murder is recession proof, right? Like, there's so many murders that we can cover. We're never going to be able to uncover all of them. The way that our podcast works is, one, we're very much so advocates of the victim, because a lot of times in Netflix series or any series that you see, they really talk about the killer and they don't really talk about the victims. And we try and give our victims a voice. So, you know, we obviously could only speak for Madeline McCann. She was only three when she disappeared. Do as best as possible. But there's just so much speculation.
So before, there was a little bit of focus on the idea that the parents may have done something and tried to cover right. it up. This series really imply that perhaps Madeline was taken as part of a sex ring, sex trafficking ring. What are your thoughts about that?
It's entirely possible. You know, I don't know, because I will say watching, it's hard because a lot of times the cases, especially with disappearance cases, it's usually someone you know. It's not someone that is just random, you know, going into your house, taking them. For me, it almost made more sense for the parents to sort of be involved. Originally, when I was watching the show, and it was probably the first, I don't know, two or three episodes that probably covered this, you know, they seem to intimate that the parents drugged their children with Colpro, which was kind of, you know, just like a medication, you know, you take if you have a cold. And, you know, they were little. And so maybe they just, and they were both doctors, maybe they had given them too much. And, you know, Madeline had passed away and it was a complete accident. They didn't mean to do it. And everyone sort of covered it up. Okay, they accidentally killed Madeline. This is horrible. I understand the psyche of wanting to get out of that, right? Because they were with mm-hmm. like a group of friends. For everyone to keep silent about that forever seems unlikely to me. And they had blood sniffing dogs that found blood in the room that Madeline was staying in. Obviously, if you drugged your kid and they died, there really wouldn't be any blood. Unless, you know, she had cut her finger or something beforehand. And so there's just a lot of questioning back and forth. Now what we sort of know and how the series is really playing out, at least in the last three or four episodes, is it's possible she was taken into a sex ring, which is a common theme among a lot of missing children. Johnny Gosch, who was the first milk carton kid, people still believe that he's alive and he was taken into this underground sex cult and kind of sold into sex slavery. It's entirely possible. I hate to say it. It's entirely possible. I'd like to think that because she was taken when she was three, that, you know, either she's not suffering anymore. I don't want to say, oh, I hope she's dead because that's terrible. I just hope she's not suffering in any sort of place. And she's treated well. I would really hope that she wasn't in some underground ring and someone could save her. I don't know. There's so many creepy things out there. And then the other kid who also disappeared, who was also three, like during that time, it's entirely possible. What do you think, Kate?
Well, this one was really hard for me to watch. I have, you know, children around the same age. In fact, I have a daughter who is three, almost four. Now, Madeline was taken on May 3rd. Her birthday would have been May 12th, making her 4 years old. She disappeared and there was a sighting of her being taken by someone while wearing pink pajamas and barefoot. And as right before we even started this, I'm taking my daughter, the same age, who looks exactly like Madeline, out of the car with pink pajamas without shoes on.
And oh my God.
Just like tears me apart. I think also she was abducted the week that I got married. So a lot of people will ask me, well, would you have gone to dinner so far away and let your kids stay in the right. apartment? And the more I think about it, I think that this case really shaped the way parents think, because I would like to say no. And I do think that there are many Europeans that have a more cavalier way of having dinner and entrusting that they can have their children, you know, in close proximity. I think Americans have a different point of view. But I also think that this case shaped the way people think, because now, even at a baseball game last night, I didn't let my kids play on a jungle gym, even within sight, because Madeline McCann's case is always at the back of my head. So I had children after Madeline was taken. And I do think it really has changed the way people think about how much they watch their kids. I do know that. Well, I have to say that after watching this, I tend to believe that she was taken as part of sex trafficking. And here's why. I live in Southern California, and I'm friends with a police officer who works in the hate crime unit of the Los Angeles Police Department. He pushed me to get my kids fingerprinted, even the babies. And he said, it's really important because there is a really bad ring here. and kids are being taken to the Long Beach port and they're taken overseas. And if you don't have them fingerprinted and put into an international database, we don't know if we're ever going to be able to find them again. Should they?
Oh my God.
If they're taken.
You know, I mean, listen, a lot of this, and to your point earlier, even about being a mom and, you know, how Europeans might be feel differently in different cultures than in America, you know, because I think a lot of people, and listen, I'm not a mom, so I could be misspeaking here, and you could probably speak way more to this than I ever could. But I feel like once you let your life out there and you have children, you're allowing for everyone to judge you. So a lot of times in the documentary, at least in Netflix, you know, they were like, the parents were acting so cavalier about it and they just want the press and they're not crying enough and there's no remorse and they're laughing and they're doing this or doing that. And they're under so much scrutiny. And so I think when they're saying that, it also affects my perception of how I'm viewing them. You know what I mean? Even though I don't have children, and who knows how someone would react to losing a child. I couldn't even imagine. That's got to be the worst thing to happen to anyone in the entire world.
I do know that in many of these cases that the police departments or the authorities tell the parents, do not cry on television or in interviews because the captor...
Right. They, it'll look weak. You'll look weak.
And they also almost get off on it. They enjoy watching the parents in distress. So they beg them not to react in interviews. And that's why you see people look like they're drugged or something, because they've been told... This is the only way to protect your child. You cannot react in the news interviews. And it goes against logic, because we would think that if we were on television, I'd say, please, I can't breathe. I need my child back, please. So it's. I think the parents are in an awful situation. And the idea that these parents would have done something to their daughter, I don't believe it. I don't believe they're diabolical. As you mentioned, there are too many people involved that would help to have to help with the cover up.
And they have two other children, you know, like they have two other kids, and not for nothing, but I do a lot of cases, and we just covered Chris Watts last week. We've done Susan Cox Powell, where it's rare that it's just one kid that they, if you're, you know, a sadistic parent, it's pretty rare that you're just going to kill one of your kids. You're going to kill all of them if that's the case. You know what I mean? Like that's like an Andrea Yates thing. You're not just going to be one and then. You know, the only thing I think that was interesting was when the other two kids that they had were like sound asleep during the entire commotion, which I find interesting.
Well, I don't know. I don't know how I have a almost 4-year-old, and she, once she's asleep, she's asleep. So that didn't really raise an eyebrow. I think that.
Interesting.
I think that this family was targeted. They arrived at that resort on April 28th. So they had been there for 5 days, enough time for people to monitor what they did. They went into the kids club each day. The families all had dinner at the same tapas restaurant. They could see what they were doing. And also a note was left out to say, this table is reserved. They were being watched. And let us not forget that this is a town. While it may look beautiful on television, there's an underbelly to it. And it is also in close proximity to Northern Africa. And Mauritania has a horrible sex trafficking reputation. So I think it's hard for people to believe that there is this part of the world that's so sick. But it's a very complicated world. And there's a lot of money behind it. And I think people, if anything, what this case does, it reminds us all to keep our eyes very wide open and to have each other's back. And that's always my hope in some of these cases, that there is a silver lining to it. And I hope it's that.
Well, here's the thing, a question for you is like a parent, and I agree with you wholeheartedly. And listen, these things absolutely exist. And I'm sure they exist in the United States, but they definitely exist overseas. Do you think that by having these, you know, getting these cases out there of missing children and the disappearance of, makes parents now sort of overparent their kid? Like, are we doing a disservice by not giving our kids the freedom now because we're so worried about them being the next Madeleine McCann?
I am relentless in my job, which is to protect my children.
Right.
And I will not apologize for that. In that way, and I think that many of these documentaries like Abducted in Plain Sight and Leaving Neverland, that, and I've had the privilege of talking to the directors and producers of some of those films, and I've said the same thing to them, that I think that it has been hugely important for those films to be shown, because we need to remember how important it is to pay attention to the people in our children's orbit and who, you know, where they go, because we need to protect children. So I will not apologize for that. And I, yeah, the truth is that she fit the profile for a trafficking ring. She's right. From, she's a white 3-year-old, almost 4-year-old girl. It's awful, but it's the truth is that there's a tier system. And she sort of fit the profile, and she was targeted. And there were people that were taking photos of the children at that ocean club. So I don't think that having money still go to the fund will upset people. And the other part to your question is, if I were the parent, I would try to keep that secret as long as possible, because
right.
It was suggested to me that Natalie Holloway may have been. Had like track marks and, you know, had been subjected to awful things. And so if someone is taken and they have been under drugs for like 4 or 5 years and they've been abused, it's going to take a long time for them to unwind. This is not like an Ariel Castro situation where 5 girls live in Detroit in a home. These are women and young men who have been
slaves,
transported from country to country and been slaves. And it would take a lifetime to get over that. So I don't know what the timeline is for us to know what has happened, but I have to trust that their parents and the mental health professionals that are working with them will know the answer to that.
It's just so scary to even think about, you know, when you were talking about like the perfect profile of like, and Madeleine McCann really hit it, you know, because in my mind, from what I've seen in the cases that we've covered, at least on Martinis and Murder and the stuff that I read in the news, is that you kind of want to get them young so you can have them for a long period of time. Her being 3, you know, you could have her for 15 years before she's a full adult.
A 3-year-old girl is going to start to forget about her mother and her father and her siblings in a shorter
and
period
think it's
of
normal
time.
Life. Right.
Yeah.
And think this is how it should be. You know, that's what's so, especially today's age of just, you know, it almost seems like these types of captures would have been easier 20 years ago to pull off. But now with social media, you know, I don't know. It seems like, especially if you're going to, 3-year-old, okay, they're not going to fight back. They're probably not going to say anything. You can manipulate them in any way, but almost like stealing, you know, an 18-year-old. It's kind of like, how could you possibly keep that quiet? It's such a disgusting.
I think people would be surprised to know how easily it is. I have reason to believe that Amy Bradley, who disappeared from the cruise ship, 18 years ago. Remember Amy Bradley?
Yep.
I believe she's still alive. I think that she was taken into sex trafficking, and I think that she probably feels some sort of shame and doesn't know how to get out of it, because in the process of surviving, she may have had to do things in order to stay alive. And maybe that's a difficult life to leave. And especially if somebody has forced you to take drugs.
God, this is horrible. This is really bringing down my morning, Kate.
I know,
this
but you know like- what? I try to replace that feeling of frustration and defeat with action. Always. And I do think that there was a reason the story needed to come out again, and it's to remind us all to be vigilant for our own children and for the children of the people in our own life, you know, in our circle of friends. And if we all are vigilant, that these cases will start to dwindle, and that we're all in this together. I hope we all don't forget that we're all in this together.
Absolutely. And you know, you're so right about just making things public. And, you know, I always say the best disinfectant is sunlight. And certainly on Oxygen and on Bravo, you know, we covered the Dirty John case, which was a really popular podcast. It was a story broke by the LA Times. I'm sure you've heard of it. And, you know, we talked to Deborah Newell, who was, you know, Meacham's victim here. And she said, listen, like, the reason I want to do this is because I really want to just show other women and men the red flags. And to make sure that they're aware and they're more vigilant and they're paying attention in the future. And I do think that the more we're able to talk about this as society, however dark and terrifying it is, the better it will be all around for everyone.
I just think that we all need to adopt the I don't think so mentality. That's the way I like to live my life. Like you get an answer and you're not happy with it. You're like, I don't think so. Like I'm going to fix this problem. So God, these poor
parents.
Need
to be critical.
those poor parents, I just, it breaks my heart. It really does.
It's horrible. And all the, and all the press that they were getting, you know, again, if you're, especially because they couldn't cry, all the hate mail that they were getting from people. That's another thing that I don't understand. I don't understand trolls. I don't understand people that go out of their way to say something horrible to another person. And the amount of stuff that they were getting and probably still get is just gut-wrenching to watch.
I know.
Not only did they lose a daughter, but now they're being vilified for it.
And you know what? The other victims that we forget about are her siblings, right? That they had to continue life without their sibling and to watch the pain in their parents' faces every morning when they wake up and they don't have their daughter.
Honestly, I can only imagine. I could only imagine. And I would be the same way. If I had children, you make me feel better about having children in my future, Kate.
You will be just fine. You've watched enough of these episodes of like 48 Hours Mysteries and Dateline.
That's true.
You will be just fine.
I've watched too much now.
Yeah. Yeah,
exactly.
Tell everybody again where they can find you, social media, your podcast.
Yeah, so podcast is Martinis and Murder. You can find it anywhere you get your podcasts, Spotify, iTunes, wherever, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. We have episodes coming out every Thursday and Sunday. You can follow me on social media at Carpe Darren, which is essentially just my name backwards, but it's supposed to be Carpe Diem. You can find all of my videos on there. I also started a little mini talk show that I do called Tiny Talk Show, which you can find at tinytalkshow.com.
The amazing Kate Casey.
I want to thank my great guests this week. Great, great, great guests. Phil Kogan, Kimberly and Katie from Date with Dateline, and Darren Karp, the great Darren Karp. Please go to Facebook and add yourself to our group, Reality Life with Kate Casey. Like I said, we're going to discuss Ladies Who Punch on Sunday. And you can also talk about all the other reality shows. Like, there's a lot going on with this Hills reboot. It's not even on the air yet, and there's so much to discuss. And who could forget about all the different Real Housewives shows? And I'm happy to see that Portia from Real Housewives of Atlanta is now posting pictures of herself without all the makeup and all the accessories now that she's had a new baby, because that's truly what happens. You have a baby, it's so beautiful, and you're so in love, and you really give two shits about eyelash extensions, at least for a good couple weeks, and then you're like, okay, I got to get my act together. So much to unpack there. And then also you can find me on Twitter at Kate Casey. I tweet during shows and about shows. And my Instagram is at Kate Casey CA. Please go there. Check out the upcoming guests that I have. And I always do Instagram stories about the ridiculous things that happen to me all week. And finally, my website is loveandknuckles.com. Hope you guys have a great week.
Once upon a beat. Remember the stories and fables that captured your imagination when you were young? We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remixed and reimagined for the kids in your life today. Yeah. Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a music-filled weekly party hosted by me, DJ Fuse, and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, spinning tales in the new Kids and Family podcast, Once Upon a Beat, where hip-hop and fables meet. Hey, grown-ups, listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. Once Upon a Beat.